Good afternoon.
This is KDVS 90.3 FM. This is a public affairs show called Books and Ideas. I am DJ Safikar. We are broadcasting not far from where the village of Putatoy once stood, inhabited by Patwin Native Americans. This is the second week that we're looking at the sounds of a wild snail eating, The Earthly Adventures of a Woman and a Gastropod by Elizabeth Tova Bailey, first published in 2010. This book is about 1 year in the life of the author Elizabeth Tova Bailey when she becomes bedridden from an unknown illness and how she's able to find meaning and strength through companionship with a wild snail, despite the many hardships she faced. The book is about the rewards of closely observing nature. It shows that anything can be the subject of our intellectual curiosity. It is about how zooming in and focusing on a small part of the natural world can illuminate our own human existence. In this book, there are two protagonists. One is a human and the other an unremarkable wild snail. And truly, when it comes to abilities, strength, resourcefulness, and complexity, neither is less than the other. Sometimes we think that we know the familiar things sufficiently, but if we pause and look at them closer, we find out that we almost know nothing about them, and what we know is only superficial. The book mixes various genres effortlessly. It is an illness memoir mixed with biology, nature writing, art, and environmentalism. It is about our innate affinity for other beings, even for those animals that are very distantly related to us. It is also about survival and resilience. The early chapters deal with Elizabeth's initial observations of the snail. As Bailey becomes increasingly more curious, she goes to science to find out more, anything and everything she can. She also consults poets, writers of memoirs, natural history, and children's stories. She probes, for instance, how and what they eat, how they get around, and their sexuality and reproduction. What she finds out is truly astonishing. We've done the first five chapters. Chapter six is called Time and Territory. Bailey notices that her relationship with time begins to change during her illness. She writes, "The relationship between time and the snail confused me. The snail would make its way through the terrarium while the hands of the clock hardly moved. So I often thought that the snail traveled faster than time. Then, absorbed in snail watching, I would find the time had flown by and noticed." There was a mountain of things that Bailey wanted to accomplish, but there was little that she could do about it now, and time continued to drag on. Bailey writes, "We're all hostages of time. We each have the same number of minutes and hours to live within a day, yet to me it didn't feel equally dulled out. My illness brought me such an abundance of time that time was nearly all I had. My friends had so little time that I often wished I could give them what time I could not use. It was perplexing how in losing health I had gained something so coveted to so little purpose." Excuse me. Elizabeth recounts that she eagerly awaited visitors, but the anticipation and the extra energy the visits required caused her a numbing exhaustion. "Each visit was a window that opened momentarily into the life I had once known, always falling shut before I could make my way back through. The visits were more like dreams from which I awoke once more alone. As the snail's world became more familiar to Elizabeth, her own human world becomes less so. My species was so large, so rushed, so confusing." She found herself preoccupied with the energy level of her visitors and started to observe them in the same detail with which she observed a snail. She writes, "The random way my friends moved around the room astonished me. It was as if they didn't know what to do with their energy. They were so careless with it." While Elizabeth notices her visitors' seemingly endless energy, she is equally aware that her visitors were shocked at how little she moved. Bailey writes, "They began to talk about more interesting things, but halfway through a visit, they would notice how little I moved. The stillness of my body, and then an odd quietness would come over them. They would worry about wearing me out, but I could see that I was a reminder of all that they feared, chance, uncertainty, loss, and the sharp edge of mortality. Those of us with illnesses are the holders of the silent fears of those with good health." And soon enough, her visitors would be off again, chasing their busy lives. While the energy of Elizabeth's human visitors wore her out, she discovered that the snail inspired her. She writes, "Its curiosity and grace pulled me further into its peaceful and solitary world. Watching it go about its life in the small ecosystem of the terrarium put me at ease. I began to think about naming the snail, as it was an individual with its own unique characteristic trait. I had learned in the book Odd Pets that snails are hermaphrodites, which narrowed the option. But a human name didn't seem to fit. The snail was not just an individual creature that I was coming to know. It was introducing me in spirit to its entire line of gastropod ancestors, which I guess reached far back in time." For Elizabeth, looking into the terrarium was like entering that ancient era from her recumbent bedside view. The ferns and mosses appeared as miniature forests and fields, and she watched the snail go about its life. It seems as if it lived in a timeless world without change. The more absorbed Elizabeth became with her snail, the more she wanted to learn about it. In the end, Elizabeth decided not to name her companion. She writes, "I like the sound of the word snail every time I use it. The word was as small and simple as the creature itself." Part three of the book is called Juxtaposition. All right. Chapter 7. It's called Thousands of Teeth. Part 3 is entitled Juxtaposition, and in this section, Elizabeth and the snail are often viewed in juxtaposition with each other. Both herself and the snail find themselves in alien environments and confined to a small area. Their movements are not completely free. In fact, during her illness, movement was difficult for Elizabeth. Even moving side to side would cause her heart to beat wildly and erratically. She can only traverse the expanse of her room with her eyes. Physically, she's almost paralyzed. Bailey acknowledges in the epilogue that it's only after her recovery, years later, that she will read in more depth about the life of the terrestrial snails. At the time, she could not hold a book, much less focus on reading. But it is her close observation of the snail that inspired her to read more about it. Elizabeth is amazed by the extensive array of literature, both ancient and modern, that focused on the life of her little companion. The scientific name for snail or slug is mollusk, with a single muscular foot. That's a gastropod. So the scientific name for snail is a mollusk with a single muscular foot, which is namely also called gastropod. Derived from a Latin and Greek meaning stomach foot. She also comes across poets and writers who have each, at some point in their life, become intrigued by the life of the snail. She requests through the interlibrary loan the 12-volume compendium The Mollusca, which covers the entire phylum of mollusks, soft-body creatures lacking a backbone, from the octopus with its human-like intelligence down to the tiny snail. As she skims along, reading a little bit each day, she finds that every scientific field, from biology to physiology to ecology and paleontology, is packed with insights on gastropods. The abundance of the detail is astonishing, ranging from their complex teeth patterns to the biochemistry of their slime and the intimate details of their species-specific love lives. Yet she discovers that even with mollusks' many volumes, a certain perspective on snail life is missing. In the 4th century BC, in the history of animals, Aristotle describes snails' teeth as sharp and small and delicate. Since we now know that snails possess around 2,640 teeth, Elizabeth adds the word plantitude to Aristotle's description. Snails' teeth point inwards so as to give the snail a firm grasp of its food. They have about 33 teeth per row, and maybe 80 or so rows that form a multi-toothed ribbon called radula, which works like a rasp or a file. Some snail species are predatory, and a few are even cannibalistic and will bore a hole through another snail's shell or attack directly through an aperture. These snails have evolved fewer but longer teeth, which they can fold, rather sinisterly, out of their way to give the snail's mouth more room for ingesting their victims. This particular trait, Elizabeth admits, gives her shudders, even though she knows her snail is not cannibalistic. Elizabeth thinks that her snail's nodding its head while eating is a character trait. But having so many teeth explains why it moves in this way and why it leaves odd ridges while grating away at the portabella or the odd squareness of the holes on the paper. Elizabeth writes, with only 32 adult teeth, which have to last the rest of my life, I found myself experiencing tooth envy towards my gastropod companion. She continues, it seems to me far more sensible to belong to a species that has evolved natural tooth replacement than to one that has developed the dental profession. Listeners, once we believe that we were made in the image of God, this view assumed that we got the best of the animal world. But now we know many animals have abilities we lack or are more able. Eagles can see up to 8 times further than humans and can focus on a prey from up to 2 miles away. Owls' night vision is at least 35 times greater than humans. Bears can smell up to 20 miles away compared to humans who can only smell up to 6 feet away. A bear's sense of smell is approximately 2,100 times better than that of a human. Average dog's sense of smell is 100 times better than that of human. A bear's sense of smell is 7 times better than a bloodhound's sense of smell. Dolphins can hear frequency up to 10 times higher than humans and use echoes to understand the size and shape of objects. Crocodiles have a much more powerful immune system than us. If we eat rotten meat, we get sick and could even die. But this is not a problem for the croc. The croc does not get infections nor afflicted with diseases. Chapter 8 is called Telescopic Tentacles. Bailey writes, when my snail was active, its muscular head and foot were extended. But at the slightest hint of disturbance, it quickly withdrew them into a shell's largest outermost whorl. Its soft body containing the vital organs, a lung, a heart, and a gastronomical system, was connected to its shell by an internal mantle, which also provided space for a water reservoir. The snail can store up to 1/12 of its weight in water, and thus camel-like, they can survive long stretches of dry weather. About half of a snail's respirations occurs through his skin, and the other half through a breathing pore, a little hole on its right side below its head called nomenstome. This pore allows air exchange by diffusion, opening infrequently, maybe 4 times a minute, more or less, depending on the snail's activity. As warm-blooded creatures, we humans have to maintain a constant body temperature. But snail is cold-blooded, and its temperature matches that of its changing environment. Thus, it could get by on half the calories needed by a similarly sized mammal. Elizabeth snail has 2 pairs of tentacles. The lower pair are 1/4 inch in length, while the upper pair are nearly 1/2 inch long with eyes at the tips. The snail could instantly retract its eyes through those hollow tentacles, which could retract just as quickly into its head. She describes that when her snail is foraging for food or grazing on a mushroom, its tentacles quivered and twitched continuously. She writes, "The tentacles stretched toward desirable smells, but were instantly retracted from anything the least bit offensive. The snail could move its tentacles individually in nearly any direction, up to 90-degree angle, sweeping them slowly back and forth and up and around. While we humans have 5 senses, relying most heavily on vision to find our way, Bailey points out that a snail relies almost entirely on just 3, smell, taste, and touch, with smell being the most critical. A snail cannot hear anything at all. It lives in a world of silence. Its sight is highly limited, just a general awareness of dark and light to help with orientation. Bright light might warn of a hotter, drier, and more challenging environment. Dark suggested safer, cooler, and more humid conditions. And a sudden shadow might alert it to a predator. The tentacles are so important to a snail that if they are damaged or cut off, they can be regrown like the limbs of a starfish. The tentacles hold the smells and taste receptors. The upper tentacles of a snail contain thousands of chemoreceptor cells, similar to those inside the human nose, while its lower tentacles contain taste buds and can distinguish between salty, bitter, and sweet flowers. Snails see the world through smell, the way many insects do. They can detect aromas from just a few airborne molecules. Snails smell through their antenna, which detects elements of the environment around them. A snail's navigation is complex. It is based on detecting ever-changing odors, sources of darkness and light, tactical sense of air movement, and through the touch receptors on its single body foot, which responds to vibration and different types of trains. This was how my snail mapped the wild woods from which it came from, as well as the crate beneath the pot of violets and the terrarium, writes Elizabeth. As she learns more about her companion, Elizabeth learns that the snails are extremely sensitive to ingestion of toxic substances from pollution and to changes in environmental conditions, such as temperature, moisture, wind, and vibration. Elizabeth writes, I could relate to this since my dysfunctional autonomic nervous system made me sensitive to these things. The regulation of my body's temperature also no longer worked. One moment I was chilled, the next too hot. This made life as a cold-blooded animal seem appealing. Chapter 9, Marvelous Spirals. Excuse me. Most of the animals have a skeleton system inside their body, but there are some animals like snails and crabs which have a skeleton system outside their body called exoskeleton. Elizabeth is mesmerized by her snail's shell. She writes, even when the snail is asleep, I love to gaze at the beautiful spiral of the shell. It was a tiny, brilliant accomplishment of architecture. Indeed, since the radius of the spiral increases exponentially in a snail's shell as it progresses, it fits the definition of logarithmic and equiangular spiral. Many examples of these spirals exist in nature among both animals and plants. These patterns can also be found in the eye of a hurricane and the double helix of our DNA. The spiral arms of the Milky Way are also logarithmic spirals. What sets logarithmic spirals apart from other spirals is their self-similarity, meaning that the spiral maintains the same shape when you zoom in and out on it, revealing similar patterns of different scales. These enigmatic spirals, characterized by their constant angle of growth, have fascinated scholars, artists, engineers, and naturalists for centuries. Among the extensive literature on snails, Elizabeth found a lecture delivered by G.A. Frank Knight in 1905 to the Perthshire Society of Natural Science, which he describes science's keen interest in the shell of the snail. In his lecture, he notes that the whole subject of convolution in the mollusca is one of extreme interest and has excited the inquiries of eminent scientists. The animal, with unerring certainty, will mold for itself a habitation, which will be finished with an absolutely perfect devotion to geometrical curves, proportions, and principles. Despite how infinitely varied the series of the curves may be, and how wide is the scope granted, the law of the spire of a logarithm must be strictly adhered to. As a snail grows, its mantle secretes material at the shell's opening, strengthening and widening its house by increments to keep up with its expanding body size. The shell of Elizabeth's snail has 5.5 turns, or whorls, around its center starting point. She writes, I could see the past growth lines. Its final shell opening was elegantly rounded off with a wide, creamy lip, which she would later learn was evidence of her snail's maturity. The whorls of the snail lean asymmetrically out of the center. Her snail shell was dextral, with a right side opening, which is most common, while snails with a left side opening are sinistral, which is the least common. Okay, the first one was dextral, and the next is sinistral, the one on the left. The spiral direction of the snail has a direct impact on snail's relationship. In order to mate, the snail must find a mate with its species with the same matching shell. If a snail shell gets injured, repairs can be made quickly. New shell material is secreted by the mantle, and where there was once a crack, a scar appears, looking much like a scar in human skin. Even if a snail is missing part of its shell, the missing section can be replaced. Oliver Goldsmith described this process as early as 1774. He writes, "Sometimes these animals are crushed seemingly to pieces and, to all appearances, utterly destroyed. Yet still, they set themselves to work and in a few days mend all their numerous breaches to the reestablishment of the ruined habitation. But all the conjecture are very easily seen, for they have a fresher color than the rest and the whole shell, in some measure resembling an old coat patch with new pieces." Okay, perhaps I can put in my two cents here. This description reminds me of an art form called kintsugi. Kintsugi is the Japanese art form of repairing broken pottery by mending the areas of breakage with gold and silver. Kintsugi means to join with gold. As a philosophy, it highlights imperfection rather than hiding or disguising them. It is about embracing the beauty of human flaws and learning to accept and celebrate scars and defects. In an article titled "Shellfish, Their Ways and Works," published in 1852, George Johnson praises the snail's shell as an edifice rivaling, nay, exceeding in complexity, yet order of details and perfection of elaborate finish, the finest palaces ever constructed by man. Bailey describes her snail's shell in more modest terms, as an earthy color with a modest matte finish. Unlike Johnson, Elizabeth compares her companion shell to a humbler abode, best described by the Mandarin Chinese words for humble abode, wuzhou, which literally means a snail's house. She considers the snail's shell as a brilliant solution to a life of wanderlust. Its look reminds her of a rolled-up sleeping bag, the kind she had once strapped on the top of a backpack when she was more active herself. In the 3rd and 4th century BC, the Athenian poet Philemon observed, "How ingenious an animal is the snail. When it falls in with a bad neighbor, it takes up its house and moves off." Okay, thank you for listening. That's it for this week. Okay, I'm going to play a song. It's called The Ecclesiastical Fashion Show. It's from a movie, Fellini's Roma. Thank you.
You're listening to KDVS Davis, 90.3 FM. The following views presented in this hour do not reflect the views of KDVS, KDVS sponsors, or the University of California. Up next, The Smile Show, after these messages.
I didn't want to talk. She just sat with me. That was all I really needed.
We got back. One day he called me out of the blue. And it's comforting to know that I always can count on him to have my back.
She called me from time to time. I really didn't think I needed any help.
It took me from being really depressed to feeling like somebody cared to give me some hope. Just that one text.
Be there. Your call. Your presence. Your words. Your support. Be there and help save a life. Learn more about preventing suicide at veteranscrisisline.net.
Oh, man, KVS would like to announce a new KVS mobile app. It's available for both iPhone and Android platforms. Now you can stream KVS anywhere in the world, in the palm of your hand. You can also play back what you've just heard and access the KVS website, as well as the Facebook and Twitter pages. It even has a calling in button, and best of all, it's free! This is only the first draft of the app. More functions will follow from future updates. You can show your support